The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
I've been spending a lot of time thinking about how we rebuild a conversation in America in particular, but globally, where folks are able to disagree without hating each other. Pluralism is a fancy word for saying when you've got a bunch of people who come from different backgrounds and have different political interests, how do we build a bunch of different entry points for people to be in conversations with each other? How do you organize yourself so that you can sort out those differences, find some common ground that leads then to the possibility of common action?
The latest message from the divider in chief. It's time to come together. How do we find common ground? How do we unite such a polarized and divided nation? How did we get this way? Well, have a look in the mirror, Barack Obama. Have a look in the mirror. And that clip, he's advertising for this conversation he wants to have about pluralism, about finding common ground, about making up for our differences and being able to unite as a country. But the style of it, even where he is, he's just a washed up politician. He's got the grift going. He probably gets $500,000 for doing a seminar like that, just having his little sit-down meetings with all of the other left-wingers that he can find. And low energy. It's divisive. I saw Michelle Obama. She's coming out with another book. I mean, why wouldn't you keep writing books if you can get multi-million dollar advances for them? And again, it was the same kind of, I hate using the word vibe because that's what all the lefties use, but there was no energy to it. It was opening the book up and, oh, what's this one about? I don't even remember the title. I mean, it's so uninteresting at this point, what they're doing. Notice what Mr. Fleury writes in America Under Attack. Barack Obama came as an angel of light, and millions of Americans believed and still believe him. But as president, was he the guardian of America's democratic institutions and traditions, like the rule of law? Did he leave the instruments of our democracy at least as strong as he found them? And that's what Obama would say. Mr. Fleury says, he did precisely the opposite. Focus on his actions. Look at his fruits. Anybody should be able to see past the angelic artifice and recognize the real power at work. His fruits define what he meant by fundamentally transforming America. Remember the swooning. Remember where America was in 2007, and then take a snapshot of it at 2016, and then again at 2020. 2016, I remember that year. I mean, Obama came in, and every chance he had, he would politicize something before an investigation could even happen. Trayvon Martin, if I had a son, he would look like Trayvon. All of the riots that came after that, there was the incident, I think it was in Boston. I mean, before even any of the details could come out, he was already up at the lectern race baiting, dividing the country. And then think back to 2016. It's so easy to forget about the things that were going on there. I mean, it was the summer of Brexit, but it was also a summer where a lot of people were wondering, is this the Civil War? There was all the attacks on the police were incredible that year. It was shocking. There was the mass shooting in Dallas where there was that parade. It was an Antifa or a BLM parade, and it was guarded by thousands of police officers protecting those people and their right to free speech. And then there was a sniper, a black man, got up in a parking garage and opened fire on the police, killing five officers. There was the rioting in Charlotte, North Carolina. I mean, every possible opportunity Obama had, he would exploit one of these shootings before any of the facts were uncovered. Eric Holder, Jay Johnson, they were there in a heartbeat. Al Sharpton, Ben Crump, all of them there to get in on the grift, to make sure they were making money off of George Floyd, dividing the country. And then the angel of light comes on just today and says, "We've got to come together and talk about how we can just have peace and look past our differences." Remember how they swooned over him. And one commentator noted how just the few weeks we got of Kamala Harris, especially right when she announced that she was running, for all of those who don't remember 16 years prior, I mean, that swooning that was going on for Kamala, that was Barack Obama for 12, 18 months, nonstop. And really, it was happening all the way up until 2015, 2016. Look at the fruits, as Mr. Fleury says. Look at what Obama did to divide this nation. And then for him to get up there and to talk like that. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily, by the way. I forgot to mention that. Thank you for joining us. I'm pre-recording this show in advance. I hope you're enjoying your Thanksgiving break. If you have any comments for the Trumpet Daily, again, send those to td@thetrumpet.com. Don't forget to watch the show on Rumble, like and subscribe there. There's one comment following that Twitter post from Barack Obama where he posted that video, and it was from a pretty popular account on Twitter. And notice what they wrote. And then think back to 2008. Would anybody talk like this? This was in response to that video we played at the top. This account writes, "Literally the last person on planet Earth that should be attempting to teach people how to disagree without hating each other is Barack Obama. That man deliberately and with malice aforethought set out to pit Americans against each other as a means to power. He fomented racism and intolerance just when it seemed the USA was about to overcome those sins. We now have the worst racism issues since the 1970s, and he is singularly to blame." He writes, "Obama is sheer evil. He comes in like Satan in disguise, speaking mellifluous words of apparent hope that are actually a cloak for unleashing all of the hatred mankind is capable of. Obama is an evil demagogue who cannot be sent to the ashbin of history soon enough." People are seeing it. People see it. It took a long time, but we weren't that strong in 2008, but in a way it was. And no one would talk like that in 2008, 2009. Certainly by 2013, when America Under Attack came out, that was loud and clear through Mr. Gerald Fleury. But look at people seeing this evil for what it is. A lot of people are, well, they're responding to what's being exposed. And like we've covered on this show, Trump isn't the solution. Trump isn't the answer. God wants repentance, but he's exposing a lot of evil, and people are seeing it now, and they're not going to have any excuse. I wanted to cover this story just because that clip got me back into Obama. And there was this story. It was uncovered actually a year or two ago, but it kind of went under the radar. It was about this secret press conference that Barack Obama had with progressive journalists. And it was right in that critical time period that we've talked about many times on this show, December 2016 to January 2017, that Mr. Gerald Fleury has said to look in detail at what happened in those weeks as they led up to January 16th and 17th, and ultimately Donald Trump being inaugurated on January 20th. The transcript of this, I don't even know what to call it. It was a roundtable where he sat down with journalists just as he was about to leave the White House, but it really didn't get a lot of attention because the transcript itself wasn't published. They just learned about this secret meeting that he had with all of these journalists who are supposed to hold him accountable for things. They all agree to have this sit down with him. This is from Bloomberg, who broke the story back in 2022. Again, though, we didn't have the full transcript, so we just heard what they thought was interesting from it. It's titled, "For Obama, one Trump term wasn't a big worry, but 8 years would be a problem." Barack Obama told reporters in his last days as president that he wasn't worried about a single Donald Trump term, but was concerned about a sustained period of political norms being undermined. Skipping down, Obama met with reporters 3 days before Trump's inauguration on January 17th, 2017, for an off-the-record conversation. The details of the meeting, which was never reported under the ground rules agreed upon by the journalists, was included in a cache of documents released by the Justice Department in response to a Freedom of Information Act request. So in this moment, Obama is kind of trying to, it sounds like from what I've read, just set them at ease and almost giving them a blueprint or a plan on what to cover or how to write about it. And why would they even agree to this and then come out and not talk about it? I mean, it's not like people haven't spoken to journalists off the record before. But this is from a man who claims to be, you know, the most transparent president in American history. And here are all of these secret meetings he's having. I mean, why a secret meeting with the press? The point of the press is that the people get to know what's going on. And the transcript we have, this, that's just what's recorded. The fact that they all met together, what was said that wasn't recorded in that transcript at the roundtable where they're meeting together. Barack Obama telling them, cover it this way, write about it this way. This was an article that was published just a couple weeks ago titled, "Obama and Russiagate, the Untold Story." It says, and if all of that wasn't enough, on January 17th, 2017, Obama invited a group of journalists to a secret White House meeting. A 21-page transcript, which was only recently released, reveals that Obama used this meeting to carefully plant the fraudulent Russia collusion narrative in the minds of attending journalists. This is at the same time we've played the montage. Every day Obama would get up there and say, we have to respect the peaceful transfer of power, while he's plotting this coup. He says he did this despite knowing that the entire situation was a hoax. But Obama ensured that the media perceived things otherwise, providing not only the presidential seal of approval to the Russia collusion hoax, but also the impression of confirmation from someone with access to all the relevant secret intelligence. In other words, Obama abused the presidency to ensure that his successor would be burdened with the incessant Russia collusion narrative. So Obama, when you read this transcript, he leaves it very open-ended. Well, I can't say for sure. Kind of like Comey with, well, is Donald Trump a Russian asset? I can't say it's not possible. And they all had the evidence proving it was a total hoax. And they would get up there and lie. And Obama here is doing the same thing with these journalists and in a way hinting at, hey, you're going to need to look into this a little bit more. He knew in July of 2016 what was going on. John Brennan knew what the DNC was doing. And they could have stopped it. But it was way too useful to them, and they used it to stage this coup. And we know that the media was integral to that coup. They really couldn't have done it without a complicit media, like Mr. Fleury writes about in America Under Attack. This is a quote from what was recorded in that secret meeting with progressive journalists. Obama says, "I think the Russia thing is a problem. And it's a piece with this broader lack of transparency," referring to Donald Trump. "It is hard to know what conversations the president-elect may be having offline with business leaders in other countries who are also connected to leaders of other countries." So here again, hinting at, well, there is something there. I've seen the reports, and we know that it was just total propaganda all the way through. That January 6th intelligence assessment that he commissioned on December 9th, the most complicated task and assignment in U.S. intelligence history. And they finished this report within just a couple weeks because they knew exactly what they wanted to be written in it. They already had the Steele dossier. And then Obama comes out and says, we're doing this. Then January 5th, the big secret meeting, January 6th, it's all published for us to see. And then the coup starts rolling. Obama says, and I'm not saying there's anything I know for a fact or can prove, another lie. He is a liar. He knew it was false. He knew it was debunked. But he gets out there and he just keeps hanging this red meat out in front of them. And look what the media ran away and did. Look what they ran away and did to someone like General Flynn. And I'm not saying there's anything I know for a fact or can prove, but it does mean that here's the one thing you guys have to be able to know unequivocally during the last 8 years, and that is that whether you disagree with me on policy or not, there was never a time in which my relationship with a foreign entity might shade how I viewed an issue. And that's, I don't know a precedent for that exactly. Just making this up, you know I wouldn't do that. You know I wouldn't be influenced by a foreign actor. Ignore Joe Biden and Hunter cashing in off of that office in Ukraine. You know, and this is Obama, the angel of light, saying, you know I tell the truth. Remember how he would say that? You know I wouldn't let this happen to me. So I don't know what the precedent is for it. We've never had a Russian agent win the presidency before. He acts like he didn't know what was going on, and he was well informed. Later, a reporter asks, could you talk a bit more about the Russia thing? Because it sounds like you, who knows more than we do from what you've seen and is genuinely, and then Obama interrupts and can say less. This is one area I've got to be careful about. But look, I mean, I think based on what you guys have, I think it's, and I'm not just talking about the most recent report or the hacking. I mean, there are long-standing business relationships there. They're not classified. I think there's been some good reporting on them. It's just they never got much attention. He's been doing business in Russia for a long time. Penthouse apartments in New York are sold to folks. Let me put it this way. If there's a Russian who can afford a $10 million or a $15 or a $20 or a $30 million penthouse in Manhattan or is a major investor in Florida, I think it's fair to say Mr. Putin knows that person, because I don't think they're getting $10 million or $30 or $50 million out of Russia without Mr. Putin saying that's okay. And what did the media do? The sycophants. What did they do? They walked away. I should have gotten the whole list of articles. I've got it somewhere on my computer. Listing just the Russia hoax each day, multiple times a day. Business ties here, the building in Moscow, all of these things. And it's right here from Obama, the marching orders to the progressive journalists. I'm trying just to go through it and deduce who these journalists are. But judging by what's redacted, there's probably about 6 to 8 of them there. And then try to find the stories that they wrote. I'm sure maybe David Ignatius was in there. David Korn, some of the big ones early on, who wouldn't let this thing go. Go look into his ties with Vladimir Putin, says Barack Obama, essentially. And he knew there was nothing there. Later on, Obama says, but what I worry about most is there is a war right now of ideas, more than any hot war, and it is between Putinism, which, by the way, is subscribed to at some level by Erdogan or Netanyahu or Duterte and Trump, and a vision of a liberal market-based democracy that has all kinds of flaws and is subject to all kinds of legitimate criticism, but on the other hand is sort of responsible for the anyway. He goes on, but again, putting that in their ear. And they, like that reporter says, could you talk about it? Because it sounds like you, who knows more than we do, it sounds like you've seen something. And Obama wouldn't say he hadn't seen it. Obama just let them believe, I've seen it. It's classified. I can't talk about it. But you know, go start pulling on those strings in Russia. And they sheepishly obeyed because they swooned for him. Think about these journalists that would even agree to this meeting and then walk out of it and say nothing and conceal it. But they had their marching orders. They were given their instructions. The next day, January 18th, 2017, there's a press conference. Obama's last press conference as president, none of this comes up. Maybe some of those were the same White House reporters, and they got what they needed from Obama, and the next day it was a total whitewash. That was the press conference. And Obama, in that press conference, does allude to having these off-the-record conversations with journalists, just to assure them that everything's okay, just to assure them that I think we can survive one term of President Trump. What did he say? But we can't survive two. I think that 4 years is okay, Obama said. Take on some water, but we can kind of bail fast enough to be okay. 8 years would be a problem. I would be concerned about a sustained period in which some of these norms have broken down and started to corrode. To say that, and then now to see what happened in 2020. I mean, it was a coup. They knew, well, we can't keep him out. He won that election, but we can start plotting for 2020, and we'll make sure that his agenda is thwarted every step of the way from 2017 all the way through 2020. This was the press conference. I should have grabbed the clip, but the one where Obama, again, just praised the media for how tough they were. But I have enjoyed working with all of you. That does not, I mean, I'm sure he, it's good I didn't grab the clip, because it would probably be about 4 to 5 minutes of dead air and the most pregnant pauses you've ever heard. So it's probably a lot faster for me to read it, perhaps less annoying, hopefully. But I have enjoyed working with all of you. That does not, of course, mean that I've enjoyed every story that you have filed. But that's the point of this relationship. You're not supposed to be sycophants. You're supposed to be skeptics. You're supposed to ask me tough questions. You're not supposed to be complimentary, but you're supposed to cast a critical eye on folks who hold enormous power and make sure that we are accountable to the people who sent us here. And what an angel of light. Well, you guys, you're really tough. It's been rough. I've had a tough going over these last 8 years, because you're certainly not sycophants. You certainly never swooned. Ben Rhodes bragged about it. Remember, they know nothing. They come to these White House press conferences and the average journalist is 27 years old. They've never left the country. We can tell them whatever we want is going on in Libya. We can tell them whatever we want about the Arab Spring, because they don't leave this press room. They don't know anyone in those countries. They don't know anyone on the other side of the country. We have absolute control over the blob, his words. Sycophants. And Obama would get up there and act that way. And look how this story was used. We're still in the midst of it. Some of these people will not let it go. It's all they have. They're one trick pony. They can't give up on this because it's their money maker. And the left there, they want to hear about Trump being a Russian agent. Mr. Fleury played those clips about Tulsi Gabbard. And Tammy Duckworth. I really believe she is a Russian asset. Tulsi Gabbard has been in public life, I don't know, it might be decades, served in the military. I mean, it's one thing to say maybe she's naive and she's just reading something on the internet that's misinformation. For her to get up there and say she's a Russian asset with no proof other than she parroted a Russian talking point. As if MSNBC has never done that before. As if they're totally immune from ever being influenced by a little bit of propaganda, or by a little bit of propaganda from Barack Hussein Obama. We would never. This story, or this clip, this is Alexander Vindman. You'll remember him. You won't forget his face when you see it. I got very confused during the election because he has a twin brother who I think ran for Congress in Virginia, probably won that. I didn't follow up on that. But Vindman, if you remember, he was the one that worked for, I think it was somewhere at the National Security Advisory Board. NCI, something like that. Just this really bloated intelligence apparatus. But he was the one that said the whistleblower who saw the Trump-Zelensky phone call reached out to Vindman, and Vindman was just so appalled by this. Vindman, who I think might have been born in Ukraine, had been offered a job by Ukrainians, makes up this whole story about the quid pro quo, ignores quid pro Joe, and says, takes that story and just plants that on Donald Trump. Total bogus impeachment number one. But he's got the book deal. He's on TV all the time, and he won't change. Just, he's doubling down. Listen to this clip. This is clip three.
Clearly, Putin has a type. He likes narcissists and egomaniacs that he knows as a case officer he could easily pander to and manipulate to do his dirty work. We are under attack. Russia has been using different levers, whether that's corruption networks. In this case, it's influencers like Donald Trump, like Elon Musk, to really kind of sow discord. Putin has been very effective in playing both Trump and Elon, and he's been using the richest man in the world to do his bidding. In some cases, that's encouraging him probably to support Donald Trump. That's not speculation. We see how far in Elon has gone. And then using Twitter as a disinformation platform. So this is not some sort of far off distant threat. This is this is going to impact our elections. It's a national security threat. We're talking about a very practiced KGB case officer. He served through the rank of lieutenant colonel as a case officer. And in that capacity, he was trained to suss out the vulnerabilities, the weaknesses, the ways to engage his target, his agents. And he's using Trump and Elon as his agents.
These people are nuts. And MSNBC keeps lapping it up, despite, we'll talk in a second about their cratering viewership. I mean, maybe just try to sound a little bit more plausible, Alexander Vindman. Maybe just, it's really easy. There's a lot of stuff on Twitter, and the Russians, they've got a lot going on Twitter, and it's just, maybe you just read something and walked away and thought that was a fact. He says Vladimir Putin is using Donald Trump and Elon Musk as agents. Now, I've read about how the left and the Marxists, how they use agents. You can read all about it when you learn about the history of the Steele dossier and how they would set up these plants to honeypot guys like General Flynn or George Stephanopoulos. They take nobodies and they groom them, essentially. He gets on that channel and says, Donald Trump, who has been probably one of the most famous individuals on the planet for the last 40 or 50 years, Vladimir Putin got to him and is using him as a Russian asset. Elon Musk, another one, has been famous for 25, 30 years, not to mention was pretty far left in the way he thought just 3 or 4 years ago, and he's definitely left-wing on a lot of things. But now to come out and say, Vladimir Putin also got to Elon Musk. Elon Musk is giving Starlink to the Ukrainians. I mean, they almost couldn't function and fight that war without the internet services that he's providing. But Vindman gets on there and says he's literally groomed by, I guess, personally, Vladimir Putin. He kept talking about how Vladimir Putin knows how to do this. He's former KGB. He might even just be the point man on this. It could actually be Vladimir Putin and Elon Musk. They've spoken on the phone. It might literally be that Elon Musk is Putin's puppet. And Nicole Wallace on that interview, oh, wow, tell me more. That's really interesting. Coming from someone who has no insider information anymore. It's 2016 all over again, and MSNBC just give me more. We haven't learned our lesson. Why would we learn our lesson? Well, they might be in for a rude awakening. This is from The Wrap. MSNBC's audience sliced in half as viewers flee post-election. I mean, they can't. There's nothing interesting on that show. I bet you could. And any of our viewers, you could see the events and the news of that day. I think you could very accurately write the script for Nicole Wallace or Morning Joe. It's just so predictable. It's so obvious what they're going to talk about. Even if you're a Democrat, why bother tuning in? The Wrap says, primetime has gotten ugly for MSNBC, and the struggling news network has lost more than half of its audience since election night, as viewers have fled MSNBC after Donald Trump won his second White House term earlier this month against Kamala Harris. I mean, again, they just, it's the same thing over and over again. I think of, is it Carl Bernstein and Bob Woodard, I think. Just the one thing was Watergate, and now they are immortalized for 40, 50 years. They're on every show all the time, even though they don't even do the work anymore, giving their input, because they were used as pawns in the 70s to take out Nixon. Alexander Vindman might have the same fate, and really, it's probably a pretty good living. That's why Vindman can't stop doing it. You get a lot of attention, and you get a lot of book deals. Michelle Obama would know. It pays. It pays really well. MSNBC, or The Wrap says, here are the grisly figures for MSNBC. The network has pulled in 661,000 primetime viewers on average post-election, compared to the 1.3 million viewers it averaged this year heading into November 5th. That's a 50.7 drop in viewership. Then they talk about how CNN has also had about a 30 to 40% decline. Again, the election year is always going to be a surge, so it's inevitable there's going to be a drop-off. It just wasn't expected to be this dramatic. Fox News, on the other hand, has seen its primetime viewership increase since Election Day. The right-leaning network has averaged 2.96 million primetime viewers over the past 3 weeks. I think, I better not do math. Almost three times more than CNN and MSNBC combined. Fox's ratings are up 25% post-Election Day. The regime media are losing. They're being silenced. Obama, that clip at the top, I mean, what's he doing? He's just, I'm just having my sit-down round table with three or four other radicals. Here's some cheesy music behind it. Nobody cares. Where would we be? I mean, with all, even the owners, so that's, I thought was just a hilarious aspect of this, is Comcast is ditching MSNBC, says, you're ruining our brand. We've got NBC. I personally, I don't even know why the two of them exist. I know there's network and there's cable. But they're worried that MSNBC is hurting the NBC brand. Trust me, NBC hurts its own brand plenty. MSNBC is definitely worse. But wait, Comcast, they're left wing. They work with the government. We're supposed to be fighting Hitler. But at the end of the day, they're all still worried about their bottom line. They're all still worried about the money. You would think, let's spare no expense to take out Adolf Hitler. Nope. What are we going to do without all of these really brave journalists? That was one thing that cracked me up over that clip from the Axios CEO. What we do is really hard. Normal people can't do it. A lot of normal people are doing it, and they're on Twitter. And I hope that offends you, because in some ways it shows that you don't need to go to college for 8 years and get your big fancy degree from Harvard or kiss up to whoever it is to be a journalist. So yes, your whole career is undercut, because all it takes is somebody who is honest and curious to look into these stories and expose how radical you are. Axios, we work so hard every day, and then you look at the stream of stories coming out of there, I'm like, I don't need to get into it. We're going to miss the bravery. We're really going to miss those hot takes from Alexander Vindman. America Under Attack, Mr. Fleury says, think about that. This is going back to the Steele dossier. A law enforcement source fed information to the media, then the law enforcement agencies used the media's stories as proof that the source was right. The media wrote stories about these claims, which law enforcement agencies used as even more proof to renew the warrant. Law enforcement and the media formed an echo chamber. Mainstream media executives were complicit in this lawless plot. They continually gave credibility to this nonsense. It couldn't have happened without them. And I suspect there were a lot more meetings between Obama and those progressive journalists, probably in the summer of 2016 as well. Obama is losing. He's being silenced. Remember him, and this was a big moment for Barack Obama, and we talked about it on the show, where he had that comment, and he was chastising black men for not voting for Kamala. And a lot of people on the left came out and said, who do you think you are? Well, something changed, because nobody would talk to the dear leader that way, even just months prior to that. He said, the brothers aren't turning out for Kamala. And then I saw this clip and couldn't stop laughing. At Stephen A. Smith, there's a lot of things he's way off on. I don't agree. I don't like his content or Bill Maher's content. But this clip is hilarious because he just gives a total exact. Obama thinks he's so cool. Obama thinks he's the one, the chosen one. And he gets along with all the brothers, as he would say. And then Stephen A. Smith here says, actually, the brothers really like Donald Trump. This is clip two.
Complicated. I don't know. Life is complicated.
I wouldn't call myself his friend by any stretch of the imagination back in the day.
Right.
But I've told this on many occasions. I said this in my recent appearance on The View and stuff like that. Trump and I were friendly.
Right.
Before he ran for president. He used to have these boxing matches, particularly during the Tyson fights at the Trump casinos. He would be at the Knicks games and stuff like that. And if we're being totally honest, all the brothers found him to be cool.
Right.
They found him to be very cool. So let's be clear, because he knew his sports, all right? He would say what he feel.
Right.
He bucked the establishment, which we loved, and we gravitated to that. And obviously, he was
a certain age.
And you get
a certain, like,
it was cool.
Racism.
I have never called him a racist. I have never spoken about him that way, ever. Not one time.
It was cool. It was cool to like Donald Trump, as he's saying there. What is going on the left? They're all, the swooning isn't happening anymore. You go find that tweet on Barack Obama's Twitter page and read the comments. Look at the most liked comments. I mean, there will be the swooners on MSNBC and CNN, to be sure. There's always the radicals, but he's losing the mainstream that he had so much control and power over. Obama isn't cool anymore. He's washed up. It's not exciting to like Barack Obama anymore. As we've covered on this show, it's cool and it's fun and it's exciting to like Donald Trump. And in a lot of ways, I'm not saying that is right, but Trump, he's going to have king-like popularity. I mean, the Bible describes him as a king, King Jeroboam. I mean, he was an icon the late 70s through the 80s and 90s, early 2000s, a cultural icon. I mean, if I could think back to being little, I didn't care about pop culture, but I knew Donald Trump. Everybody knew and always knew Donald Trump, because if you want to be rich, it was, I want to be like Donald Trump. And I remember the comedians talking about him all the time. Frank Caliendo, he had the big Trump impersonation. I mean, he was an icon until 2015. Then you've got just this chaos for 4 years. And now they've run out of steam. And Donald Trump is back to being that icon and in a lot of ways taking on that king-like popularity. Even with, just think about RFK and Elon Musk. I mean, I was trying to form a list of just some of even the more subtle miracles that led to Donald Trump's return to the White House. And you look at RFK, that he is so far on the left, and he still is with a lot of things. But he runs as a Democrat on the Democrat ticket, and the Democrats, just like in 2016 with Bernie Sanders, can't be bothered to say to RFK, hey, we agree with you on some things because we see that you're pretty popular. We're going to find some middle ground. How about you just come around to Joe Biden and we'll give you a post in the White House? They totally alienated him. They demonized him. So he runs now as an independent. As an independent, I need to research this a bit more, he probably would have taken quite a few votes. I mean, even on some states, he was still on the ticket, and he took, I think it was like something like 700,000 votes nationwide. I mean, that could swing Wisconsin. That could swing Nevada or North Carolina or Georgia, maybe. Maybe Michigan. But instead of running as an independent, he sees how crazy the left is. He goes to the other extreme and is now working for Donald Trump. And that happens in what? That would have been maybe 6 months, maybe a little longer. I mean, God working all of this out to get King Jeroboam back in office. And then Mr. Flurry, along the way, reading that prophecy in Amos 7 and reads in there and God reveals it. But there, after a certain point, Obama, there's no more Antiochus. He's off the scene. And then he's talking about Obama being silenced. And this is still where Obama, everybody looks to Obama. Joe Biden's losing his mind. What does Obama want? And then Obama being silenced. This was an article in the New York Times titled, "Get Somebody Else to Do It. Trump Resistance Encounters Fatigue." I mean, these are fascinating times that we're living in, but Bible prophecy is there to guide you along the way. And it gives you the big trend lines. And look at all of these little details getting filled in there to where Trump does behave like a king. He has even king-like popularity. This is an article in The Hill. Trump Jr. says father has discussed banning mainstream news outlets from White House briefing room. Just a hilarious story. Also, again, interesting thinking about how a king would rule. I mean, Obama, they don't talk about it, but he ruled like a king. He was an authoritarian, the way he would spy on journalists. People knew to get in line around him. Donald Trump's just quite a bit more open about doing it. The Hill says, Donald Trump Jr., President-elect Trump's eldest son, says his dad has discussed keeping some mainstream media outlets from the White House press briefing room. Why wouldn't you? If you look at the Washington Post and what they did to General Flynn in 2017, some of these outlets, some of the smaller ones, how they published things they knew were lies. CNN and who's the lawyer, Michael Cohen's lawyer, I can't remember his name. They knew that he was a source for a story, and then he gets on the show and says, well, an anonymous source gave this to me. And he was the anonymous source. They just brazenly lie. Why wouldn't you keep them out? Again, it's not like they can't report on him, and I don't even know that there's that much value to having these sorts of journalists in the press room anyway, because we can watch them live. We can all see what's said. It's just who's asking the questions. Trump Jr. said on his podcast, we had the conversation about opening up the press room to a lot of these independent journalists, he said. If the New York Times has lied, they've been averse to everything. They're functioning as the marketing arm to the Democrat Party. Why not open it up to people who have larger viewerships, stronger followings? MSNBC, we read the stats, they're losing power. Joe Rogan, far more popular than whatever, I don't even know what the primetime shows are on MSNBC. All I know is Morning Joe. I think Chris Hayes might be on there. Rachel Maddow once a week. She gets a lot of money for one show a week. The traditional media, they know that they're popularity is cratering. They know that they don't have readership like they used to, and they're losing power. Even Bezos stepping in at the Washington Post and just telling them to be a little bit more moderate. The CEO of Axios would, of course, be livid because he works very, very hard every day. Where would we be without Axios's brave reporting about, well, I don't need to get into what they were reporting about. Speaking of the brave media, remember how they would go on and on about Trump and how he was, when he would criticize someone and that was a dog whistle to violence, even though there was no evidence that that was going on. All it took was another Juicy Smollett to come on and just say that this thing happened. Oh, I received a death threat. Is there any evidence? Nobody would even ask that question. But here, Trump's nominees, they're getting death threats. And as Peter Ducey mentions in this clip, this is a pretty frightening prospect. When you consider how the Secret Service deliberately failed Donald Trump, if not aided or were complicit in that assassination attempt, twice. So you've got those failings this year, and now you've got all of these nominees who are getting roasted by the media right now, and they're not in any official capacity, so they don't have any security. This is Peter Ducey on some of these reports of threats and attacks against Trump's nominees. This is clip four.
Emily, this is a potential national security problem, so we have reached out to the National Security Council at the White House to find out what they are tracking. We will bring you their answer once we have one. We have also been in touch with some officials down with the transition team at Mar-a-Lago. They are not willing to go any further at this time than this statement. We made a graphic so you can follow along. Last night and this morning, several of President Trump's cabinet nominees and administration appointees were targeted in violent, un-American threats to their lives and those who live with them. These attacks ranged from bomb threats to swatting. In response, law enforcement and other authorities acted quickly to ensure the safety of those who were targeted. President Trump and the entire transition team are grateful for their swift action. And just as we were coming to air, we learned who at least one of these Trump appointees, or rather Trump nominees, was. Who received one of these threats last night. It was Elise Stefanik, who President Trump wants confirmed by the Senate to be the ambassador to the United Nations. She says, in part, in a statement this morning, her office says, this morning, Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, her husband, and their three-year-old son were driving home to Saratoga County from Washington for Thanksgiving when they were informed of a bomb threat to their residence. She goes on to describe a pretty robust response. And we're also told that this is Fox News Digital, that the director of the CIA nominee, John Ratcliffe, and Pete Hegseth, the DOD nominee, were among those targeted too. Keep in mind, these are all private citizens right now who are up for big jobs in the future. And once somebody takes over the Defense Department, say, they would have Pentagon police. Once somebody takes over the CIA, they would have CIA police. But right now, they are private citizens living in their homes preparing for confirmation hearings. So they don't have security details per se to deal with something like a swatting incident where the police show up because of an erroneous, with guns drawn potentially, because of an erroneous tip that there is some kind of violent action happening.
We've still got almost 2 months before the inauguration. Maybe in some ways the left won't go down silently. Maybe there won't be some big, giant, you know, summer of love type rioting, but even just some of these attempts on people's lives, even if those ones, it sounds like they're just threats. But it's clear the shift in this country, Obama being silenced and Trump being placed in that position of power, there's plenty of time for the radical left to cause chaos. Maybe they try it again and it just completely fizzles out, and then it's just clear to everybody what is being worked out here. I mean, the assassination attempt should have made it clear to everybody what God was working out here. I thought I would just recommend this article from Mr. Flurry if you wanted more information on this. It's titled America's Supreme Court Has Fulfilled Bible Prophecy. It's in the September 24, 2024 Trumpet magazine. And he says in there, watch the rise of Donald Trump and the fall of Barack Obama. I love even that comment, because he's not even saying watch the fall of Joe Biden or the fall of Kamala Harris. It's always been Obama behind the scenes. He talks about Amos 7 and the detail in that prophecy and God silencing that man. And again, we, as all of these articles do, give you the big picture view of Bible prophecy. We've got to see it from God's perspective, what he's working out here. And God saves Israel by the hand of Jeroboam. And there will come a point where those blessings are taken away, or where it all just crumbles, because no man can solve these problems. We've been talking about it a lot here just with some staff. And you know, these are some of the best leaders in history, but they are still men trusting in men. And there are some things that you can do right on that physical level, but it's not going to solve the spiritual problems. Only turning to God and repenting and following what God says to do. That's the long-term solution to all of these problems. And Mr. Fleury has made that point in these articles. I did want to conclude with the little bit of time that I have left talking a little bit about Doge. Again, like I said, this isn't the solution to every problem, but it is interesting just seeing these men get in there and solve some problems with just common sense and good work ethic and some resilience and putting in the hours and working hard to do things instead of what we've seen for so long, just this bloated government that can't act. Doge is Department of Government Efficiency. It's probably the aspect of the incoming Trump administration that I'm the most excited to see if Elon and Vivek can pull this off. And I thought, I read a few, maybe it was last year or a few months ago, Walter Isaacson's book about Elon Musk. And there's a lot of profanity in there. And certainly, like I mentioned earlier, Elon Musk is not this perfect model of morality. But there are things that he's done in his business where, boy, you read about him going through the assembly line and how involved he is in every process, and you're just like, that would be awesome to see somebody do that, going through the Pentagon or just getting rid of entire departments in the federal government. Isaacson has this list of points or Musk's sort of big picture plan when he goes in and he tries to make something run as efficiently as possible. Because to Elon Musk, his vision is we've got to get to Mars, we've got to save our species, whatever. That's his big goal. And to achieve that, you've got to be able to reuse rockets. You've got to be able to have them land and recycle them very fast so that they can launch, you know, within hours. Isaacson says his first thing is to question every requirement. Each should come with the name of the person who made it. You should never accept that a requirement came from a department, such as from the legal department or the safety department. You need to know the name of the real person who made that requirement. Then you should question it, no matter how smart that person is. Requirements from smart people are the most dangerous because people are less likely to question them. Always do so, even if the requirement came from me, then make the requirements less dumb. And that's Elon Musk writing. Again, it's not something that you should do in every aspect of your life, but he deals with just this over-regulated behemoth that is the federal government. He says, even we played the clip of him having to do the whale survey, if the rocket lands on a whale. Okay, who made that? Go find that person and ask them why that exists, and then get them to take that rule away. Step two, delete any part or process you can. You may have to add them back later. In fact, if you do not end up adding back at least 10% of them, then you didn't delete enough. Number three, simplify and optimize. This should come after step two. A common mistake is to simplify and optimize a part or a process that should not exist. So he's coming in there saying, well, let's not try to automate that process. Let's just first determine, does it even need to be there? And you could get into a lot of government departments, and step two is going to have a field day. I think I just read step three. Step four, accelerate cycle time. Every process can be speeded up, but only do this after you have followed the first three steps. In the Tesla factory, I mistakenly spent a lot of time accelerating processes that I later realized should have been deleted. And then number five, automate. That comes last. The big mistake he's talking about in his Nevada battery plant and at Fremont was that I began trying to automate every step. We should have waited until after the requirements had been questioned, parts and processes deleted, and the bugs were shaken out. And if he takes that and if he walks into the Pentagon or the Treasury or any of these departments, we could have a very efficient government. And he's coming and saying, this project will be done July 4th, 2026. He wants it to be done on America's 250th birthday. Again, not the solution to every problem, but just fascinating reading about how he's created some of the most successful businesses in the world. And people are excited about what America can do and seeing that resurgence. I mean, there should be pride in that. But I mean, like we've said on the show, you've got to get back to the United States and Britain and prophecy. Where did those blessings come from? What made America great? What enabled us to do all of these things? And it's not us, it's not our ingenuity, it's not our genius, it's a blessing from God. And again, if you haven't read that book, it's the big picture you need. I mean, you take United States and Britain and prophecy, and once you have that, you just start funneling your way down to all of these more specific prophecies. But you need that big picture to understand America's past and where we are right now and where we are heading. If you haven't read that book, it's the most requested book written by Mr. Armstrong, over 6 million copies distributed. That's the United States and Britain and prophecy. Thank you very much for joining us on today's show. If you have any comments, you can send those to td@thetrumpet.com. Don't forget to watch us on Rumble, like and subscribe there. Thank you very much for joining us, and we will see you Monday.